time to tell me the truth, to burden your mouth for what you say, and pieces of paper in the way. 'Cause I can't continue pretending to choose these opposite sides on which we fall, loving you later.
This is Between the Lines, a monthly magazine show on the third Thursday of every month at 2 p.m. on WGXC at 90.7 FM, Creative Community Radio for Greene and Columbia Counties. I'm your host, Anne Forbes Cooper. Theatre and writing are the focus of this month's show. Actress Laura Lee Ekobele and director Jim Milton discuss the play Amelia, written by Alex Webb and which is set against the backdrop of the Civil War. It opens at the Orpheum Theatre, Tannersville, on August the 1st, 2nd and 3rd. Laura Lee and Jim will explain why this acclaimed production is so compelling. Later in the show, Athens-based writing teacher and local treasure Jean Heiberg explains how her meditation exercises help writers dig deeper. And in a note to the season, a reading from one of my favourite summer novels and a selection of summer songs to put us in the mood. Don't go anywhere. Welcome to the show, Laura Lee and Jim. I just want to ask you to read an excerpt. Do we need to set it up?
Jim, do you want to set this up?
Well, Amelia has sent her husband off to the war. She got letters from him for a year and a half or so.
Now, Amelia is the heroine of the play, right? Mm-hmm.
And nobody ever thought she was getting married, but she found a guy who could stand her. And so his letters come for about a year and a half on a war nobody thought was going to go more than 3 months. And then the letters stop. And she finally decides to get on her horse and go looking for him and to track down his regiment, the 20th New York Militia. And so this is the beginning of that journey. So she says goodbye to her mother and we're off.
Love and luck. Love and luck. I saddled up Maggie and we're off. It's pure exhilaration starting out on an adventure in the middle of the night. Everyone's asleep and so quiet it feels like you're the only one on earth. Maggie and I flew across the countryside and crossed the Delaware on the fifth night, riding on and on. And finally ahead, Gettysburg. Maggie and I knew we were close. We could hear moans and cries at night, the musket and artillery smoke thicker than cotton and stinging my eyes. We came up over a rise, and the waxing moon was behind a cloud. You could hardly see anything. But then that cloud moved aside and changed my view of the world forever. We were looking out over a river. We could see the moonlight bouncing across the waves. But as my eyes adjusted to the light, I realized that this was no river at all, but a huge trench full of bodies. What I had imagined to be waves, I could now see that some of the bodies were moving. They had been passed over for dead and were just now becoming conscious again.
Thank you. I can tell that this is going to be a great play. Okay, just fill us in a little more about it. You kind of set up this scene, but
well, Amelia is a very strong-minded, independent woman. She works on her father's farm. She runs the dairy. She takes nothing from anybody. She's very fierce. And we think she'll never find a husband. And then she does. And the day after their wedding, war is declared. He volunteers and is gone. And once she gets on that horse and heads off, heads south, she encounters all sorts of
obstacles
and characters. She runs into a runaway slave, a battlefield surgeon, all sorts. I don't want to give it all away. But it all ends up at a horrible place called Andersonville, which was a sort of the world's first concentration camp. The Confederates set it up. It was built for 10,000 men and had almost 30 in it by the time the war was over. Approximately 12,000 Union prisoners died there of starvation and exposure, and it was quite horrible. And that's where her journey takes her.
Okay, now let's just backtrack a little. It was written by Alex Webb. Yes. Now, is this based on a real story, or is this to what extent is this actually historically true and accurate?
The impulse came from a diary from somebody in Andersonville, and I think I'm quoting roughly, but there's a rumor that a woman came in here looking for her man. That was the only hint. What he did know for a fact is that 500 women served on both sides of the Civil War disguised as men, and they did all the roles. They were not nurses. They were, you know, infantrymen, artillery men. They were fighting. They were fighting for what they believed in. And there are, if you go on the internet, you can see pictures of them in uniform.
You have actually performed this while I should just say, of course, this is opening at the Orpheum Theatre in Tannersville on August 1st, 2nd, and the 3rd. But you have, in fact, performed this play before last year, right?
We did one performance last year, and it was a smash hit. People loved it. It's very poignant. It's funny. The cast is terrific. We have a really, really strong cast directed by Jim. There's wonderful music. There's a multimedia show that goes on behind, and it's very compelling. It's when I first read it, I was drawn to it immediately because the writing is so good, and the story, I mean, this is a woman way ahead of her time, you know, who was a real feminist when, you know, and fought against all sorts of odds, not just being a female soldier, but for standing up for what she believes in.
Right, and I believe it has got some terrific reviews. The History News Network said, Amelia recreates Civil War history with uncanny accuracy and delivers a knockout story. And Backstage declared, Alex Webb has crafted an ingenious tale. The narrative is historical, yet relevantly feminist, emotionally brutal, romantic, constantly upsetting, yet amusing, something for everyone. So, but it's not actually a comedy, though.
It has elements of comedy in it, but it's not comedic in any ways. But it's just real. It's human. It's people relating to each other on a...
the scene before we find out that war has been declared is a barn dance. It's a musical number, and it was interesting to go back a little. I was approached by a woman named Karen Dieter, who was the head of the Lexington Historical Society, Lexington being a township in Greene County, and they were doing the bicentennial. And the Civil War is very big in Greene County, as it is in, you know, upstate New York, pretty much everywhere. And she asked me to direct a Civil War play, and she suggested a play called Andersonville, which had been on Broadway, I think, in the late 1950s, and made a star out of George C. Scott. I read Andersonville, and I wasn't really interested, partly because it was all men, mm-hmm. and partly because it really seemed to be more of a symbol for Nazism. The Andersonville as concentration camp was really hammered home in a way that I thought really wasn't respectful to the audience at this point in time. So I found Amelia. Now, the interesting thing about Amelia originally is that Alex Webb wrote the play for himself and his wife. His wife is an actress, and so his wife played Amelia, and he played all of the other parts, men and women. He played not only Amelia's father, but Amelia's mother. And I did not see the show, although I have met Alex himself, and he's terrific, terrific. But he got amazing reviews. But I thought this would be great if you expanded it and had more than just two actors. Obviously, Amelia will be Amelia. But to have other actors who came and interacted with her. Although the actors that we have play 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 parts.
Each,
mm-hmm. yes. Because okay. The cast, if you look at the list of characters, like 32 or something like that. Okay. So, and we were doing things that had never really been his focus. Like we have a battle scene, which is pretty realistic, but it's hard to do a battle scene if you only have two people.
Okay. And now, while we mention the cast, why don't we say who they are? Because they're all local, right?
They're all local. Mm-hmm. I live in New York. I have a house up here. I've come to the Catskills for the past 30 years. Love it, love it, love it. And so I went into... Oh, I said to Karen Dieter, I would do the play if we could do it in the Orpheum in Tannersville, which, as we were discussing prior to this, is
marvelous.
This beautiful, fantastic state-of-the-art theater in the middle of nowhere. And I had seen the theater, and I saw that although it had been open for over 2 years, there had never been a play. No theater. There had been dance, there had been music, there had been movies, not a play. So I said, I want to do a play there. But I didn't think Karen could get me the Orpheum. Well,
she did.
Karen got me the Orpheum. So I had auditions, and I must say, not a lot of people came for the auditions. But just about every person who came for the auditions ended up in the play. And when Laura Lee walked in, and I gave her the script, and she read it, I went... Laura Lee, how'd you like to play Amelia? And I think she said, well, let me think about it overnight. Let me read the play.
I knew right away, though. I mean, it was something, I've always been a history buff my whole life. And actually, this is the second, I did a film about the Civil War about 5 or 6 years ago. And then this is the second play I've done. And and when I read this, I was like, you know, it just drew me. There's so much heart and so much humanity into this piece. And each character is drawn so beautifully. I mean, there are no stereotypes. It's really, there's so much guts, that's the word, in each one of the characters. Mm-hmm. And you really feel for these people. You really understand what it's like, you know, and we're in a situation, you know, like this in real life. I mean, it's when people go off to war. I mean, it's the same thing, you know. So I really wanted to play the role for so many reasons. And I was just, you know, really honored. And I'm thrilled to come and to revisit it after a year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we decided to do it again because, well, doing theater up here, you really don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, do explain.
Well, I mean, we had a website where you could buy tickets. I think there were 10 tickets sold online. So here we have this 240-seat theater, and we have this play, and we have all of this, and we have... no idea what's going to happen. Those 10 people who bought their tickets could show up, and that could be it. And we sold out.
sold out.
Sold out. And I have to tell you, I mean, I've been doing theater since I was 18. And this was one of probably the top five audiences I have ever seen. They
were three curtain calls.
They were. I mean, it's like, I mean, I have had a lot of experience, and generally in the first minute, you know, because you can hear the audience. The audience is a beast. What we on this side of this curtain do is we are lion tamers, and the audience is the lions.
It's a lovely analogy. I've never heard it described like that before.
Well, believe me, sometimes...
you have to whip them into shape.
Sometimes you get the lion, sometimes the lion gets you. But within the first minute that the play started, they were so with us, and they went with us every step of the way. The laughs were huge. Oh. The silences were...
People were weeping, too.
Mm-hmm. It was...
So bring your hankies.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has that too. So
now I'm going to bring you back to the question I asked originally. Sure. Tell me who the cast is.
The cast.
Our wonderful cast. Well, Laura Lee sitting next to me, Daniela Goldberg, who plays Mama, and she also plays a Southern woman who has been driven mad by the war. Andrew Jaffe plays a whole number of terrific characters. He plays Amelia's first suitor, who is found wanting for so many reasons.
Ben Wyatt.
He plays a character called Deadeyes, who's a Union soldier whose face has been horribly burned. He plays another Union officer, Colonel Binder, who is so full of himself, he sends his men out to die with nary a thought. Stephen Jones, who plays Samuel, the runaway slave. Ah, wonderful. Philip Levine, who I'm sure many of your audience have seen over and over again, plays a panoply of parts. We rehearsed with him today. Mm-hmm. Steve Patterson plays Ethan,
right,
who
from
is
Catskill.
who is
half the co-owner of the Bridge Street Theatre, yeah, along with John Soule, who I know is also in the
John
play.
John Soule is also in the play. He plays a number
of
parts.
He plays my daddy.
He plays his daddy. Talita Spalavi, who is from Brazil, and who came in and who was such a comic presence that I said, I want to use her so badly. So we changed sort of the... What do they call them? The gossip girl or the bad girl in town. We changed her from Marie to Maria, and you know, gave her a little backstory about, you know, her daddy buys up half the county and brings her here, and she's puts on airs. So she's in it. And Art Skopinski, who plays the battlefield doctor and also the king of Andersonville, and I say king not in a good way. So that's our cast, and they are fabulous.
And we have a great stage manager, too.
Bob Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Is our stage manager, mm-hmm, who not only is terrific stage manager, but tells us stories about the bears he's encountered that week, and you know,
and shows us how to use our weapons. We actually have.
Hopefully, these bears are not actually in the theater themselves, though. Otherwise, you really would have to be using your weapons.
That's the theater in Bearsville.
Right.
And we're just going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Thank you. with Between the Lines. I'm Anne Forbes Cooper, and we're here talking to Laura Lee Ecobelli and Jim Milton about the new play, Amelia.
Laura Lee, let me ask you, so how long are you actually on the stage for?
I am on stage for nearly 2 hours,
oh,
right? Nonstop. I get off one time to do a costume change and that's it, but I am on stage the whole time.
Yeah. When you take on a role like this, and I've seen you act now, I've had the great pleasure of seeing you act in several roles, do you learn something each time?
Absolutely. I mean, there was a tremendous amount of research that went into this.
Which was my next question.
Right, yes. I mean, I had to, you know, do the research about the role and about the period and the time and the person. She, you know, has to disguise herself as a man. And so I had to figure out, you know, how to do that. So it was real and organic for me. And that took a lot. And every time I work with a new director, you know, it's been a pleasure working with Jim. He's really insightful and really helps you discover the character organically and dive into the subtext, bring out nuances. And so it's been a journey. I feel like I'm still learning. I feel like, you know, coming back to the role after a year, you look at it with fresh eyes. So you're always learning new things. And the fact that this was based on women, you know, real women who fought in the war. It's kind of a big obligation, you know,
to represent them.
Mm-hmm. Because her spirit is so strong that I, you know, unless I went full out completely with her the way she is, I would be doing a disservice. She just reacts instantly, mm-hmm. you know. So it's, you know, it's a process, and I still feel like I'm still discovering.
We rehearsed for 3 hours this afternoon, mm-hmm. and there mm-hmm. were new things happening,
new
not
things
only
happening
for Laura Lee, but for yeah. the other people as well.
Right.
Also, with acting, I mean, almost every performance is slightly different because it, you know, it's not a film and then you capture it on celluloid. It's
right.
it's human beings doing this.
Yes. And that's both the wonder of it, is that you're in the room with the people and it's happening,
mm-hmm.
and it's also the heartbreak of it because it's gone.
Right.
There's a play by David Mamet called A Life in the Theater about two actors, and the one's a young upcoming actor and one is an old kind of lion of the theater, and he's always saying ephemeris, ephemeris.
Well, hopefully, I mean, this performance won't be ephemeris.
We have three this time instead of just one.
You know, and one last thing is that it's also really wonderful to work with such a fabulous cast. And I really don't say that lightly. I mean, everybody is 100% committed to the roles that they are playing and to Jim and to the story. And that makes a huge difference, you know, when people are so passionate about what they do.
What is the biggest challenge with this production, with Amelia?
Well, I hate to say this, but it has nothing to do with the play.
Okay.
It has to do with doing everything I can and making sure everybody who I'm working with does everything they can to get people to come. I've been doing posters and postcards and we made a radio ad the other day. I have a woman, Donna Poland, who is doing email blasts, and, you know, various people have Facebook and all of that. And I feel that, you know, I've directed the hell out of this. I have a great cast. We're going forward. The timing is right. I don't feel like we have to rehearse every spare moment or anything like that. We're finding new things. It's fresh. As a director, I'm in hog heaven. As a producer and a publicity guy, I'm tearing my hair out.
Okay, well,
for me, I agree with you on all of that. I think that is a humongous challenge. For me, you know, maintaining this character, she has invaded my life, and I have to say that, because I find it's really difficult to lose Amelia because she's so intense, And there's a great amount of physicality in this play. A lot of fight choreography and you know there's a it's high energy all the time, right from the beginning to the end. And you know, keeping that up is challenging, but it's in a good way. So it's not a bad way. It's a good way to be challenged that way as an actor, you know, to know that you have to, you know, you have to keep that going throughout the whole play.
Interesting. So she kind of takes over your life and then she's gone.
And then she's gone.
And you have sort of a hangover from her, presumably, you know. She like haunts you in
a
way.
Absolutely.
Then you just move on to the next role and somebody else is going to haunt you and...
But you don't get roles like this all that often.
No, okay. You don't.
And it would kill you if you did.
Yes, because it does take you a lot out of you.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's done like a wee bit of acting, I think that I genuinely had no idea of just how challenging physically it is and the great lengths that actors actually go to in... following their career, following
I lost
their...
10 pounds last year during the performance, just keeping, you know, keeping it going.
And Laura Lee, you cannot afford to lose any more weight. I mean, you cannot be losing.
I did. And I was, you know, I was in good shape when the time it was over with. And, you know, but
I mean, you look in fabulous shape now.
You know, but I mean, seriously, yeah. it really physically, you know.
And to switch gears slightly, let me ask you, you had mentioned earlier about all the different elements involved. So what does it cost to put something like this on?
What does it cost?
How complicated is it?
Well,
what about the sets themselves?
There is virtually no set.
We have
two tables.
Okay.
But the tables transform, are used by the actors in different ways. They become a tunnel. They become a bed. They become this, that, and the other thing. And then center stage is a large screen, and I know we all hate multimedia, but the other set element for the show is projected onto this large screen are photos from the period that basically take you to the farmhouse mm-hmm. or to the battlefield. And they're really... beautiful and sometimes shocking. And, you know, somebody said, well, why do you tell people not to bring very young children? And I say, because there are pictures of actual corpses, sometimes a few, sometimes a lot. That war was unbelievably brutal. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of thousands of people killed in all those new ways. You know, they had discovered new weapons and they deployed them. Mm-hmm. And this was the first war that was ever photographed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
And so
the evidence.
Yeah,
right.
Matthew Brady, very famous.
I mean, when
Civil
she's
war.
Talking about in this monologue that I just did about seeing that trench full of bodies, that is, you see that. And I don't even know how to... There are words that don't even describe that.
So that's the set. I mean, it's basically two tables and a screen.
And you also... You got a grant, right? From Green County Council on the Arts.
Yes. I applied for as much money as they would give me for two shows to bring this back. And the people from the Council on the Arts had seen this, and they liked it. So... they gave me a grant, and also for another show, which I'll just mention briefly, is Weird. I wrote an adaptation of Charles Dickens's Christmas Carol, a very different version, which takes place in Greene County, in the Catskills, after the Civil War. And...
That is different.
It is different. You know, we have the ghosts, we have the nasty old man, and we have lots of other elements. One of the things that appeal to me about this is that the people up here, and I'm not being condescending at all, I hope, I think don't get enough opportunity to experience the arts. And I think, without being negative or anything, the Catskill Mountain Foundation built that theater for dance and music. And a lot of the stuff they show there is brilliant and wonderful. And unfortunately, they do not, and they'd be the first to admit this, they do not get a local audience for it. They don't get much of a local audience for it. They're people who are coming from Albany or coming from Woodstock or coming from the city or, you know, whatever, to see Paul Taylor or, you know, some amazing jazz band. But the local people, for whatever reason, and it's at least half their fault for not going out and checking it out. And I knew if I could get, if I knew if we could get this up, that the local people would probably come and they would love it. And they did. That was a really, truly mountaintop audience. And as a matter of fact, right in the middle, there were like six people who looked like they'd come off the set of Duck Dynasty.
It's a popular look these days.
It is. So, you know, everybody does A Christmas Carol at, you know, in December because everybody wants to see it. And, you know, it's a great moneymaker and, you know, very popular and everything. But I said, yeah, I could do it. I could do the traditional. But why not do something that appeals here? I with Alex's permission, I made changes in the script, which moved the setting of the play from Pennsylvania, which is where he's from and where the original play took place, to New York, so that we could incorporate the names of the local units that people still remember.
The 20th New York, which there are people buried in the Lexington Cemetery that fought in that battle from the 20th New York. And yeah, they had a very active regiments through this whole area from New York State.
Yeah, that's what got me going with the Scrooge thing. And you know, I want to appeal to, you know, to them, because that's who I want to come.
Okay, Laura Lee, is there anything else you'd like to promote?
I'm thrilled to be part of this wonderful production, and I hope people come out and see it, because you won't be sorry. It's just, I think, one of the most poignant plays that you'll see for a long time.
Okay, and once again, it's called Amelia, and it's on August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Orpheum Theatre in Tannersville.
We'd love to see you, and you'll love to see us.
And on that note, thanks very much to my guests, Laura Lee Echobelli and Jim Milton. And we're just going to take a short break, and next up, writing teacher Jean Heiberg, who's running a workshop in Athens, and is going to talk a little bit about her methods for getting students to go deeper in their writing. Thank you. And welcome back to Between the Lines. I'm Anne Forbes Cooper, and my next guest is Jean Heiberg, who is a writing teacher extraordinaire out of Athens. Welcome, Jean. So tell us a bit about this writing workshop that's starting in July.
It's going to be held July 26th, the first session, which will be Saturday morning, 10 to 12, and time for lunch, and then Saturday afternoon, 1 to 3. So it's a twofer, two workshops in one day. People in the past have liked this because, especially if they come from a distance, they don't have to make two trips, and the lunchtime is very valuable for talking things over and getting to know people. And that's taking place in the Senior Center, at the Rivertown Senior Center Community Workshop, community residence.
Right, but you don't have to be a senior to attend, right?
I wanted to make that point. Yes. All ages above 18 are very welcome.
So just tell us about the workshop itself. What's it called?
The Downs and Ups of Life. I like to end on a happy note.
So it's not the other way around, right?
No. So we all go through downs in life. But the last workshop that I gave was an extraordinary group of people who had been through some difficult things, but came through and came up at the end, and they enjoyed meeting each other. When you go with what I do at the workshops, which is to play some games, get the flow of thought started, and then do an imagery meditation, people write and meet at a deeper level, and people seem to like that.
And they become friends through this workshop, do they not?
They become very good friends. That's a good thing.
Now, is it for all levels or just beginners or what?
It's wherever you are at. My method is different, unique, I would think, in that I use imagery meditations to get people's minds and heads into the subject. Whatever the subject is, after playing a few games and having a few little things to get people going on the subject, I give an imagery meditation. Now, the imagery meditation, or reflection, you can call it, bypasses the mind, the control tower up here. I'm pointing to my head, tapping my head. And it goes straight to the power center, which is your deep unconscious, your heart, your imagination. And what happens is that people tend to just flow. The writing just tends to flow. And people get to a very deep, authentic part of themselves. I talk about the inner observer who's with us all through our life, recording everything that's ever happened. And we sort of get that inner observer to work for us, to tap into what wants to be said and written about now, to tap into your memory and experiences of the past. And this is what makes it a very satisfactory experience, I would think, with some depth and very authentic writing.
And is it all kinds of writing? Is it poetry, prose, memoir?
It works for all of those, fiction, nonfiction. I would say it goes the furthest with imaginative writing, but memoir can be very imaginative, and even nonfiction can be very imaginative. The more imagination and the more personal depth and experience you bring to the subject, the better the writing, the more you have to say.
Right. Now, and you've been doing this for quite a while now. Tell us a little bit about your own background.
Well, I have a master's in fine arts, visual arts, but because I was published quite a lot before I came to Athens, I was asked to, and I published a few books while I was here at my early years here. I was asked to give a writing workshop, and everything fell into place. I got the right books. I accidentally met somebody on a bus to New York. Went straight.
One of those encounters. I've had a few of those too.
Yes. And I went straight to Barnes & Noble's and got the book that seemed to work for her in Argentina. And everything seemed to flow pretty well from there. And I've had good feedback for the most part. And my visual arts still come into play because every feature has a craft, and as well as a philosophical, spiritual resonance to it, subject to it.
And what do you hope people take away from this workshop?
I hope they love writing. I hope they feel that they've gotten into something new. Writing is a process of discovery. So by introducing a subject that they've had some experiences with, you find out sometimes that you know more than you thought you knew. And you get in touch with some of your experiences of the past and some of your feelings then and now. And with a good piece of writing started, with something started in your writing repertoire.
And what's your own philosophy about writing and these workshops?
My own philosophy is that we've all lived life and had experiences, and that sharing these with others verbally, as we do at the beginning, but then in writing, is very peacemaking. It gives you an inner peace, an inner satisfaction. We're social animals, and some of us are extroverts that communicate on the verbal level very easily. But even for them to be able to communicate through the written word lasts longer than we do. Now we have recordings and we have other means of keeping our words going on longer film. But the written word can be very powerful and very satisfying both to write and to read and to share with others. So I'd like people who want to share their experiences and thoughts to come, and don't be shy. You'll get into it and I'll get you started. I have a knack, means, techniques for getting the flow started and getting you into your own writing experiences.
Okay. How do people get in touch with you?
Oh, you can call this number, area code 518-945-3547, or they can email me at jeansarts, JEANNESARTS, at gmail.com.
And is there anything else you'd like to add?
I'd like to add that there's no fee for any of this. It's all free. Or if anyone wants to make a donation to Athens' wonderful cultural center, the Athens Cultural Center, that would not be refused. But it's not obligatory.
Jean Heiberg, thanks very much for being on Between the Lines.
Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead, walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But at night, it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, come on, and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer. In the city, cool town, meeting in the city, dressed so fine and looking so pretty. Cool cat, looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop. But at night it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on, come on, if that's all night. Just like the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city. In the summer, in the city.
I have so many favorite summer books, many that are replete with lyrical passages and romantic prose, and some with great action-packed plots. Books like The Great Gatsby, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, To Kill a Mockingbird, Ian McEwan's Atonement, Laurie Lee's Cider with Rosie, Edith Wharton's Summer, or Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises. But I'm not going to read from any of those. Instead, I'm going to read the opening to one of my favourite books of all time. It starts off lamenting the miserableness of the English summer and the lengths people go to avoid it. It's the beginning of Gerald Durrell's My Family and Other Animals. July had been blown out like a candle by a biting wind that ushered in a leaden August sky. A sharp, stinging drizzle fell, billowing into opaque grey sheets when the wind caught it. Along the Bournemouth seafront, the beach huts turned blank wooden faces towards a greeny grey, froth-chained sea that leapt eagerly at the cement bulwark of the shore. The gulls had been tumbled inland over the town, and they now drifted above the housetops on taut wings, whining peevishly. It was a sort of weather calculated to try anyone's endurance. Considered as a group, my family was not a very prepossessing sight that afternoon. for the weather had brought with it the usual selection of ills to which we were prone. For me, lying on the floor, labelling my collection of shells, it had brought catarrh, pouring it into my skull like cement, so that I was forced to breathe stentoriously through open mouth. For my brother Leslie, hunched dark and glowering by the fire, it had inflamed the convolutions of his ears, so that they bled delicately but persistently. To my sister Margot, it had delivered a fresh dappling of acne spots to a face that was already blotched like a red veil. For my mother, there was a rich bubbling cold and a twinge of rheumatism to season it. Only my eldest brother, Larry, was untouched, but it was sufficient that he was irritated by our failings. It was Larry, of course, who started it. The rest of us felt too apathetic to think of anything except our own ills. But Larry was designed by Providence to go through life like a small, blonde firework, exploding ideas in other people's minds, and then curling up with cat-like unctuousness and refusing to take any blame for the consequences. He had become increasingly irritable as the afternoon wore on. At length, glancing moodily round the room, he decided to attack Mother as being the obvious cause of the trouble. "Why do we stand this bloody climate?" he asked suddenly, making a gesture towards the rain-distorted windows. "Look at it! And if it comes to that, look at us! Margot swollen up like a plate of scarlet porridge. Leslie wandering around with 14 fathoms of cotton wool in his ear. Jerry sounds as though he's had a cleft palate from birth. And look at you! You're more decrepit and haggard-ridden every day." Mother peered over the top of her large volume entitled Easy Recipes from Rajputana. "Indeed I'm not," she said indignantly. "You are," Larry insisted. "You're beginning to look like an Irish washerwoman, and your family looks like a series of illustrations from a medical encyclopedia." Mother could think of no really crushing reply to this, so she contented herself with a glare, before retreating once more behind her book. "What we need is sunshine," Larry continued. "Don't you agree, Les?" "Les? Les!" Leslie unravelled a large quantity of cotton wool from one ear. "What do you say?" he asked. "There you are," said Larry, turning triumphantly to Mother. "It's become a major operation to hold a conversation with him. I ask you, what a position to be in. One brother can't hear what you say. The other one can't be understood. Really, it's time something was done. I can't be expected to produce deathless prose in an atmosphere of gloom and eucalyptus."
"Yes, dear," said Mother vaguely.
"What we all need," said Larry, getting into his stride again, "is sunshine. A country where we can grow."
"Yes, dear, that would be nice," agreed Mother, not really listening.
"I had a letter from George this morning. He says Corfu's wonderful. Why don't we go pack up and go to Greece?"
"Very well, dear, if you like," said Mother unguardedly. Where Larry was concerned, she was generally very careful not to commit herself.
"When?" asked Larry, rather surprised at this cooperation.
Mother, perceiving that she'd made a tactical error, cautiously lowered Easy Recipes from Rajputana. "Well, I think it would be a sensible idea if you were to go on ahead, dear, and arrange things. Then you can write and tell me if it's nice, and we all can follow," she said cleverly.
Larry gave her a withering look. "You said that when I suggested going to Spain," he reminded her. "I was 2 interminable months in Seville waiting for you to come out, while you did nothing except write me massive letters about drains and drinking water as though I were the town clerk or something. No, if we're going to Greece, let's all go together."
"You do exaggerate, Larry," said Mother plaintively. "Anyway, I can't just go like that. I have to arrange something about the house.
Arrange? Arrange what, for heaven's sake? Sell it.
Oh, I can't do that, dear, said Mother, shocked.
Why not?
But I've only just bought it.
Sell it while it's still untarnished, then.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, dear, said Mother firmly. That's quite out of the question. It would be madness.
So we sold the house and fled from the gloom of the English summer like a flock of migrating swallows. So that was from my favourite author, Gerald Durrell, My Family and Other Animals. Listening to Between the Lines, and the music we heard today was Sarah Bareilles at the top of the show, who sings Between the Lines, and then we had two of the musical compositions from the play Amelia, followed by Loving Spoonful, Summer in the City, Martha and the Vandellas, Dancing in the Streets, and to take us out, Summertime by Ella Fitzgerald. Thank you for listening. I'll be here the same time next month. This is Anne Forbes Cooper. You've been listening to Between the Lines.
And the living is easy. Fish are jumping. Is high. Your daddy's rich, and your ma is good looking. Thank you.
One of these mornings, you're gonna rise up soon. Then you spread your wings and you take to the sky. Do